call the meeting to order. We do not have a quorum, but we're going to get started anyway. And once we get a quorum, I will interrupt the meeting to officially call it to order. We do have a group here for special recognition. I see Representative Clark. I don't know if she's quite ready. Are you ready, Representative Clark? So if we could please have Representative Clark, if we could please have our guests move to the front so we could recognize them. Appetite for change, are they here? So please, if you would, wouldn't mind coming to the podium here. We have a special recognition, so I'd like to turn it over to Representative Clark to read the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to give credit to you because these are really your inspired words. But I'm honored to read them because these are folks who are really delivering this promise. So here's what it is. It's a House resolution honoring Appetite for Change. Whereas Appetite for Change is a community-led organization in North Minneapolis whose mission is to use food as a tool for building health, wealth, and social change. And whereas Appetite for Change strengthens families, creates economic prosperity, and encourages healthy living. And whereas Appetite for Change uniquely meets the needs of families, youth, new mothers, and community partners by providing cooking and nutrition education through its community cooks workshops. And whereas Appetite for Change is building a community-owned food system by empowering urban farmers in North Minneapolis to get their fresh produce into local restaurants, corner stores, and farmers markets. And whereas Appetite for Change is leading the Northside Fresh Coalition, which focuses on developing leaders through training and outreach activities that lead to direct actions that impact the food system and policies, hopefully here today. And whereas Appetite for Change is incubating small food businesses in its commercial kitchen, and whereas Appetite for Change trains and employs youth and adults at Breaking Bread Cafe, which features dishes inspired by the diverse culture of North Minneapolis, and whereas Appetite for Change offers opportunities for youth and adults to learn facilitation, recruitment, gardening, community organizing, and other skills to help them gain full-time permanent employment. And whereas a music video promoting healthy eating entitled Grow Food, written and produced solely by local youth, has been viewed by millions of people and received positive feedback from national celebrities. And whereas Black Lives Do Matter, now therefore, be it resolved by the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration of the House of Representatives of the State of Minnesota that it commends Appetite for Change for its contributions to agriculture, food justice, and youth development. It's signed by Kurt Dopp, the Speaker of the House, Trace Pepin, the Chair of Rules and Legislative Administration, and Rod Hamilton, State Representative and Chair of this committee, and supported by all of us here.
Well, let's congratulate everybody. I tell you, I don't know what the link was, but it popped up on my Twitter account, the video, and I watched that, and I thought it was one of the coolest things. And that's where I reached out to a number of folks, and I said, let's bring one of the Ag Committee and recognize them. So if you'd like to say a few words, the floor is yours.
All right.
And if you don't want to say anything, you know, it's up to you.
Well, we have the rest of our team here. I'm sure that they have prepared a little bit more substantial of a statement. Take it away, Greg. Hi.
Hi.
Sorry
to
be late.
Please state your name for the record and begin.
I'm Michelle Horovitz, co-founder of Appetite for Change. Princess Hardis, founder and director of education at Appetite for Change.
Welcome.
Yeah, well, sorry we're a little late. Forgot how tough parking is around here. this is an honor, and just wanted to say thank you so much to Representative Hamilton and the committee. And, the video was a lot of fun, and let Princess talk a little bit more about that. But for those of you who don't know about Appetite for Change, our mission is to use food as a tool to build health, wealth, and social change. And we're place-based in North Minneapolis. We have a number of programs, and one of them is Breaking Bread Cafe and Catering. So if you love shrimp and grits or just like to eat, you should come on over.
The piece that I want to share is that I was just a community member, you know, before I came a co-founder. Teaching license and my own things going on, but the type of energy that comes from people when they align into one vision and mission. We want better food in our communities, and now that we've stood up and said that the food choices and options that we have are not okay, and it's not what we want. Our young people are having the courage to stand up and say the same thing. The Grow Food video was an attempt to get that message out to other urban communities in Detroit and Chicago who are having the same food desert, food swamp, food whatever you want to call it, issues. I'll just quote one of our young people. He says, the youth are the truth, and there's no stopping them, and that's in that song. So we follow the young people, and I feel like the energy that we organize around is the same energy that we feed into them, and then it gives me hope for our future.
Well, thank you so much. We are honored to have you here today. And like I said, I saw that video on Twitter, I believe it was, and I was moved by it. I thought it was really cool, and I just wanted to ask you to come in here so that we could provide a special recognition. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We do have a few comments, if that's okay. Representative Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is actually for you. Could you share that video with us?
Yes, absolutely. I'll make sure that I get a link out to everybody. So
thank you very much. And thank you guys for all your good work.
Thank you. And we're also here to support the two pieces of legislation supporting urban agriculture. So it's fitting, and we appreciate being able to come here both to receive this
great honor and also to support Representative Clark's bills. So thank you.
Well, once again, thank you for everything. Thank you for all that you do, and it is an honor to have you come here today. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Enjoy the day. All right. So we do have a quorum, so I'll officially call the meeting to order. Representative Juergens, have you had a chance to read through the minutes dated March 14th? Would you like to move the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to move the minutes from the March 14th meeting, please.
Any questions? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. First on the agenda, we have Representative Keel. The House File 2049, it is not in our possession yet. So this is going to be informational only. We'll have this probably later today, actually, in our possession. So, Representative Keel, to your bill and your testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It will be House File 2049. So if you want to sign on later, great, or after we're done. So this is a bill that establishes a farm-to-food school grant and technical assistance program. It will increase the Minnesota-grown food accessible to kids in order to have Minnesota students access healthy and locally produced food. It will connect farmers and processors who sell their products to schools and early care providers. The first part of the bill creates a grant program that reimburses schools and child care providers for the actual cost of Minnesota-grown food. The amount of funding available is calculated based on the number of meals served in the previous year. The equivalent of 5 cents per meal will be available to the schools to reimburse them for the cost of local foods, and up to 20% of this funding can be used for educational activities that directly connect children and their families with agriculture, including things like school gardens, classroom-based gardening, or cooking projects, and also field trips to farms. The grants will be awarded on a first-come, first-served basis. The bill appropriates $4.5 million in 2018 and in 2019 for the grant program. The dollar amount is scalable, and the bill will be successful even at a lower dollar amount. Right now, half of our school districts do some sort of farm-to-school activities. It would cost $9 million for every school to get the dollars through the grant program. The second part of the bill creates three new agricultural extension positions at the U of M Extension Service to provide educational and technical assistance to farmers to help them sell to institutions. This is a number one item farmers have said they need. $300,000 would be in 2018 and 2019. Two of the positions must be based out of a different, non-contiguous extension regions outside of the Twin Cities metro area. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have four testifiers that would like to talk about their different walks in the farm-to-school food program.
right. Thank you, Representative Gill. Please state your name for the record and begin.
My name is Kathy Rogers. I'm the Food Service Director for the Pipestone Area School District in Pipestone, Minnesota.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm here today to share a little bit of my perspective, what the farm-to-school program has done in my school district. Pipestone School District is a school district of around 1,100 students. We have a free and reduced rate of over 50%. We are a diverse community. A lot of diverse cultures have moved into our community within the last 5 years. Our program started about 5 years ago, or about 10 years ago, when the farm-to-school program became very popular with the Department of Agriculture. At that time, the Extension Office had funding available to us schools, and we had lots of resources available to us. We went to workshops. Farmers went to workshops. Directors went to workshops. Administrators went to the workshops, learning how we could bring the fresh fruits and vegetables into our school programs. IATP became active at that time and also helped us with a lot of educational opportunities for our students. In Pipestone, we kind of started from, I went to a lot of these workshops that were available to us, and through the workshops, I met a lot of farmers in the area who did not know how to get their products into the school district. Basically, I started going to farmers markets. I met with the farmers, and they would tell me, hey, I've got 500 pounds of potatoes that is just gonna, would you like to try them? And that's how we started. We currently buy from 8 different producers. I buy romaine lettuce from a hydroponic farmer on a weekly basis. I buy tomatoes from a hydroponic farmer on a weekly basis. We have bought bison. We have bought honey from bee farmers. We buy tomatoes. We buy green beans. We buy carrots. We buy eggplant. We buy squash. We buy watermelons. We buy cantaloupe. You name it, we've tried it. We put it out on the line and sample it, and we built a farm stand. It looks like a concession stand with green ivy growing on it, and we bring it out into our cafeterias, and we let the kids sample it, and they tell us yes or no. If they like the vegetables or the fruits that we brought to them, we put them on the menu. The money that we had received came from a SHIP grant from the Minnesota Department of Health. And that money has helped us put in raised beds gardens in 3 of our schools. In those raised bed gardens, we take our students out to the gardens. We teach them how to plant. During the summertime, the summer school programs come out and we harvest and we weed and we talk about what we're doing. In the fall, we then bring them in and we harvest what's in the raised bed gardens. In the meantime, we have got an awesome agriculture educator in our school district who loves gardens. We have a 4-acre plot that's attached to our school where we have orchards and we're growing a lot of these products. This year we had so many cucumbers that we brought in our egg production classes, and we taught them how to transform 200 pounds of cucumbers into pickles. And every day we serve pickles on our lunch lines. We then brought in our home economics class, and we had tomatoes coming out of our ears, so we made salsa. We brought in the production classes, and they came in, and we talked about the USDA commodity program and how the school districts get our commodities from the Department of Agriculture. And we talked about the flour that we used, and we talked about the ground beef, and we talked about the tomato paste, and we made pizzas with these kids. Currently, these programs are all run through the Food Service Department. Our reimbursement is definitely tight. We have to be very careful. Our meals can only cost $1.09 each in order for us to break even. Any additional funding that could help us with our food costs, it would be greatly appreciated. It's obviously easier to open a can of green beans than it is to bring in green beans and snap 500 pounds. We bring in 800 ears of sweet corn that comes from our growers, and we husk it, and we clean it, and we cook it. We don't open a can. We bring it from the farm. We have a lot of education we bring out for the kids, explaining to them where it came from. We have pictures of our farmers we put up so they can actually make a direct link between the farm and the food that we're eating. We need to have an extension position that can come into the schools in out my area, explain to these the food service directors in that area how this program can work, and how they can bring the farm to school program to the students that they have.
All right, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For your testimony, Representative Keel, you have a few other testifiers?
I do.
Please state your name for the record and who you represent and begin.
Good morning. My name is Jane Grimspo-Jewett, and I'm a farmer in Aiken County. And good morning to the chair and the members.
Good morning.
So Aiken County, Minnesota, it's about 140 miles north of here and about 70 miles straight west of Duluth is where my farm is located.
Did you drive in today?
I did.
Oh.
Yes, and I got up and watered my animals before I left. So I have a small-scale diversified livestock farm, 113 acres. It is a part-time endeavor for me, and I'm the primary farmer, although my family does help. I raise beef cattle, sheep, pigs, broiler chickens, turkeys, and ducks, and primarily direct market everything through the Grand Rapids Farmers Market and sales to individuals. So farm to school was really my first real foray into wholesale sales, and it's been important for me to start diversifying that income stream. So that's an important consideration for farm to school, I think. I am a member of a Century Farm family, and my brother farms the home place, which became a Century Farm 2 years ago. He's watching what I do and starting to tiptoe into some of these farm-to-school sales as well. So the first year I did it was in 2015 to one school, Aiken School District, and then in this current school year, 2016-2017, Hill City School District is also purchasing meat from me, and also the Riverwood Healthcare Center in Aiken, which I think is another important thing to bring up, that the skill sets and the process of selling wholesale to farm to school can then help farmers reach out to other similar sorts of buyers. So, you know, two school districts and now a hospital I've got as contracts, and am hoping to expand further. The number of students I serve is about 600 at the Aiken Elementary School, about 275 in Hill City, and approximately 200 patients and staff at the Riverwood Hospital. It's currently a small percentage of my sales, about 6%, but I am hoping to grow it. Like I mentioned, it's helpful for diversifying income streams. It's also helpful for building and maintaining our rural farm and farm support infrastructure. I spend all of my income from the farm within 100 miles of my farm, and the majority of that within 50 miles. It's also helping with some individuals to gain confidence in the farm school. I have a friend who began with selling bakery buns to a local school district, and he has gained so much confidence and more business from that that he's now quitting his job to bake full-time, using a commercial kitchen that's located at the Long Lake Conservation Center in Palisade. So he's renting that kitchen, providing a little bit of income stream back to that education center, and launching a full-time bakery business. Why the extension positions are needed? It's really a huge undertaking to go from direct marketing or from kind of a commodity sales type of situation to selling to a school district or another institutional buyer. There are food and nutrition service guidelines at the federal level, Department of Education guidelines at the state level, food safety, food handling, food licensing, insurance, all of these things that are really complicated for farmers who are also farming and sometimes also working full-time to navigate. And so having those extension positions who can focus on helping farmers navigate that would be extremely helpful.
Right.
And with that, I'll say thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you for your testimony, Representative. Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Could that previous lady,
don't go too far away. We have a question for you.
Community.
Yeah. Can you please come back down? Sorry about that. Ma'am, I think you sound busy on your farm with beer, your many different livestock and crops. Could you talk about how you handle the processing of your livestock, your animals, and when you sell to schools or wholesale, do those folks have to have any special type of license?
Absolutely, yes. Any meat that's sold in a packaged form, rather than as a whole or a half animal to individuals, must be processed either under USDA inspection or, if sales are within the state, under Minnesota Equal 2 inspection. And so I do use Minnesota Equal 2 inspected processing. And actually, there is not any located close to where I am in northeastern Minnesota, so I do travel some distance. And that's the majority of, you know, I said I spend most of my money within 50 miles of my house. The processing is within 100 miles because I do have to travel a ways for that.
Chair Anderson. Yeah, just a quick follow-up. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Is the poultry processing different? Is that more of a USDA standard when you do poultry?
Actually, no. Poultry can also be equal to, and I use an equal to processor who's located south of Brainerd, Minnesota.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. This time we'll let you sit down, right? Please state your name for the record and begin.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Matson, and I'm the manager of administrative services at Lakes Country Service Cooperative, which is based in Fergus Falls. Lakes Country covers 9 counties in the west central part of the state, which are Becker, Clay, Douglas, Brant, Otter Tail, Stevens, Traverse, and Wilkin. And we appreciate the opportunity to be here today in support of House File 2049. We have years of experience at the cooperative in working with our school's food service programs and really supporting the important work that they do on a day-to-day basis. We assist them with food procurement, we have dietitian services for them, and we provide professional staff development for them. In 2013, in partnership with the SHIP grantees in our regions, we applied for and received grant funding from the Minnesota Department of Ag and others to start a food hub, which we named Fresh Connect Food Hub. Really, the purpose of a hub is to collect Minnesota-grown products, poultry, beef, produce, honey, etc., and act as the regional distributor for those products. We really view it as a bridge between institutional food service and growers and help open up markets to growers. Each season, we purchase from 12 to 15 farmers, the majority of which are within 60 miles of Fergus Falls. We deliver close to 100,000 pounds to 25 participating institutions, 17 of which are educational, which represents 16,000 students. In our years of operation, we have provided multiple educational events to both our food service staff and to our growers, such as how to use fresh, whole form produce in school food service operations, what does it mean to sell wholesale, and we've also held meetings with both food service directors and farmers so that they can each make those connections and learn how each other's operation works. Even with all of that we've done, we know we have barely tapped the surface onto what is needed with technical assistance for both sides of this equation. So from our perspective, this bill directly addresses some of the challenges that we have faced in our years of operation. Access to funding and the technical assistance as outlined in the bill is greatly needed, and we feel it will impact the growth of farm to school. And in turn, we really do see a vibrant farm to school program as having a ripple effect through our rural communities, affecting them for years to come.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
Thank you.
And Representative Keel, is there another testifier or no?
I don't believe so.
All right.
Was there one more? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I apologize.
Okay. So
I lost count.
Yeah. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Good morning. My name is Rebecca Jackson. Good morning, Mr. Chair and all members. I'll keep it short. I know you have a tight agenda. I'm here representing Shared Ground Farmers Cooperative. We represent 9 farms in rural Minnesota communities, including Austin, Owatonna, Long Prairie, Wyoming, Marina, St. Croix. We've been a part of the Farm to School program in Minneapolis and St. Paul since 2014.
2016, we sold $11,000, about 15,000 pounds, and fed about 77,000 students. Why this is important to us, Farm to School was one of our first signed wholesale contracts. What that allowed was our farmers to do some specific crop planning and do one large delivery as opposed to small deliveries. So for small farmers, we have small farms, 5, 10, 20-acre farms. It was much more efficient and guaranteed sales for them. This bill would open up new contracts, we feel, more crop plan guarantees. The trainings that we've been able to do with our farmers through the Extension Service Program, food safety training, GAP certification training, was what allowed us to move into the farm-to-school realm. And it has now since opened up a lot of other institutional opportunities for us, too. We're happy to have signed a contract with IB. We wouldn't have been able to do that without some of these opportunities. But I think more importantly, the farm-to-school program has allowed our farmers to have a face in our schools' communities and be a role model. It allows them to share their career, go in, share their farms, and be proud of the trade that they're representing. So thank you for your time. I'm happy to ask.
Well, thank you so much for your testimony as well, and thank you, everybody, for taking the time to drive in. We do have a question. Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Keel, I enjoyed the testimony yesterday, and I enjoyed it again today. I especially that school in Pipestone sounds exciting. My compliments. But my question is, do you intend for this program to replace the current? As you know, there's the Agri program does some efforts in farm to school. Do you see this as a replacement for that?
Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, no, I don't. I think it's complementary. In my neck of the woods, in Crookston, actually, there's a food program there that they've got a garden, and they have been working in the summer with that also and been doing. In fact, Anna was going to come down but wasn't able to, and they're doing it there too. So there are multiple programs. This is to, I think, to assist people to connect. And the bigger portion probably of this is many schools are doing some of this, but the extension program would help to connect and assist both the farmers and the schools and or whatever facilities. We hear that it could be a medical facility. I think this doesn't address seniors, but I think that in senior programs that might be even a possibility that would expand that program. And I do have to plug, you saw the group yesterday. Mm-hmm. And members, did you notice how many were male in this group? We had one beef farmer. I just wanted to point that out. Unfortunately, Representative Clark isn't here to hear that, but she was making comment about that the other day. But anyway, but it is an equal opportunity job.
Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just a comment to that respect. I'm struck by some recent publicity in the Mankato area about women in agriculture. It's fantastic. It really is. I have a question, though, for the Chair. This is an informational hearing. So what happens now to will we consider this bill next week then?
So we will have the bill in our jurisdiction possibly later today. And so then either we'll do a official action on the individual bill or it may be an DE amendment, and then we'd take it up then.
And then to follow up, you'll recall on the farm safety bill, which involved an extension position, that bill was referred to the Higher Education Committee. So I anticipate this bill will also be referred to the Higher Education Committee?
Potentially. I'm not, let's wait till we get the bill again in our jurisdiction. I'll talk to the other chairs as well in the meantime and see who else wants to hear the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Keel, my South St. Paul School District has 47% free and reduced lunch participants. Would they be able to participate in this program?
Representative Keel.
Yes, they would. In fact, there are some good programs already within the metro system. So, they would be also to be involved.
Okay. All right, seeing no other questions, Representative Keel, I thank you and all your testifiers for the wonderful testimony. We will not take official action at this time, but again, I appreciate the testimony. So thank you, Representative Keel.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, we have Representative Swazinski. This, again, is House File 1120. It's informational only for the same purposes. We do not have it in our committee. And Representative Swazinski, as you know, we have a number of bills up on the agenda today and many testifiers. So with that,
sounds good.
Turn it over to you, my friend.
Thank you, Chair Hamilton. We'll take that into consideration and try to do an abbreviated, or we'll shrimp down our presentation a little bit.
No pun intended.
That was nasty. Sorry. So, but today we really have a great opportunity, folks in the state of Minnesota, to really expand the scope and the practice of what animal agriculture is for the state of Minnesota. We've got a tremendous opportunity with the expansion with this bill, 1120, and it's really got some unique aspects. It's bringing a new animal to raise, that'd be shrimp, to the state of Minnesota, adding jobs and really adding some strong economic benefit. This bill provides a per-pound incentive payment for shrimp production in Minnesota. I should highlight for the committee that no payments are made before the production. So really there's going to be a lot, I mean multiple millions, tens of millions of dollars of investment that get put into shrimp production before a single shrimp. I mean, we're already growing shrimp through testing at the lab systems, but really on a maximum scale has to be over 25,000 pounds per quarter in order to reach the minimum mandate to achieve this payment system. An eligible producer needs to source over 80% of their feedstuff from Minnesota and produce a minimum of 25,000 pounds per quarter. We're asking for $5 million of available funds to really jumpstart this industry within the state. We're not only going to be just producing, but we're also going to be doing the marketing and the actual processing of the shrimp right here in Minnesota. Since this is a finance committee, we really want to highlight what the opportunity is going to be. We believe that construction will be over 330 jobs and $14.5 million in labor income, and an operational harbor will generate over $23 million annually to provide employment directly to over 124 Minnesotans, and looking to put multiple harbors in within the state. I have Mike Zabel, who's a general manager with True Shrimp Systems, with us today to really kind of guide us through what the potential is for the state of Minnesota and the opportunities that lie before us. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin, please.
Good morning. My name is Michael Zabel. I am the general manager of True Shrimp, a division of Ralco Nutrition Incorporated of Marshall, Minnesota.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's my privilege to represent Ralco Nutrition for you this morning. Ralco Nutrition is a third-generation family-held business headquartered in Marshall, Minnesota. It has we do business domestically in the United States, and we have we do business in 20 countries across the world. Ralco Nutrition is a technology company, a biotechnology company that focuses on all natural nutrition and animal health products. The background, how did this company get into shrimp? Brian and John Nokomis, the principals of Ralco, were exploring aquaculture for a market for our animal health and animal nutrition technology. Excuse me. And they were in Ecuador, and they encountered shrimp aquaculture there and became fascinated with that opportunity. In the process, they encountered a professor, Addison Lawrence, from Texas A&M, and Texas A&M had a patent on a technology to grow shrimp in shallow waters indoors. And John and Brian were fascinated by that, and we pursued the acquisition of that patent. In December of 2014, we acquired that patent, and that's when I joined the company. On a personal note, when John and Brian introduced this to me, my first reaction was, gentlemen, we could help feed the world if we could pull this off. And you can see by our mission statement, perfecting technologies for a safe and abundant food supply fits this project completely. As we did our work, the first thing we did was build a laboratory in Ballyton, Minnesota. We called it the Pilot Plant and Innovation Center. And there we brought the technology from Texas A&M to validate it and to start to grow it to a commercial size. In that process, we developed our own technologies. And also in the process, it became very clear that we were not building a shrimp farm. We were building an entire industry. And as we pursued that, the diagram that's in front of you represents a fully integrated shrimp company, a fully integrated shrimp industry. We are going to use the classic model that is used by many of the protein integrators across the United States and Minnesota, companies like Christensen Farms. We will have a central hub of excellence, as we call it, where there will be genetics, the hatchery, the production of feed, the engineering, veterinary services, and then we'll also do the processing and the sales and marketing of that shrimp. Supporting that hub will be a series of what we call harbors. We call the shrimp production facilities harbors. And we're not trying to be cute in that. We're trying to separate ourselves as far away from shrimp ponds across the world. The market for shrimp in the United States is 1.6 billion pounds. That's 5 pounds for every man, woman, and child in America. We do not have to teach the American people how to eat shrimp. They know how to do that. So the market is there. 80% of that 1.6 billion is imported from Southeast Asia and Ecuador. The other 20% comes from the ocean, from the Gulf in particular, and there is no growth there. They are taking as many shrimp out of the Gulf as they can. The shrimp farming across the world looks a little bit like this. It's quite a primitive affair. It is done in coastal regions. It is all manual work. They simply develop ponds adjacent to the ocean, pump the ocean water into the pond, fill the pond with shrimp, and grow them out. The problems that they have in particular is they are just absolutely riddled by disease. For decades, the shrimp aquaculture industry in other parts of the world has been fighting disease. And the only remedy is really to pour massive amounts of antibiotics into the water in an effort to try to fight off the viruses and the bacteria. Our system, this shallow water, super intense raceway, or what we call a tidal basin, gives us the opportunity to grow shrimp in shallow water. Those ponds across the world are generally 3 meters deep. We would grow the shrimp in an average depth of 12 inches of water, which gives us a greater ability to control the quality and the chemistry of the water. The unique thing about the technology is that the shrimp's uneaten feed, their fecal matter, and the molts, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, are carried away by a very gentle current created by this tidal basin. Therefore, the shrimp never live in their own waste like they do in the ponds across the world. This picture here shows you a CAD drawing of what a tidal basin looks like, and that's a photograph of our research center in Ballyton, Minnesota. I failed to mention, we believe today that our research center is one of the foremost shrimp research facilities in the world, and we are making plans to expand it as we speak. This is a science-based endeavor. From the day we started, we knew we had to invest money into the validation of the technology and also the science of growing shrimp. One of the reasons that Texas A&M selected us for this patent is Ralco's nutrition expertise. This graph, it's very complex, but it shows how we scientifically track the growth of the shrimp. And we are now to a point where we can grow a 35-gram shrimp, which is a 16 to 20-count shrimp, fairly big shrimp, in 140 days from PL to 35 grams. And we are told by people in the shrimp industry that is an unprecedented event anywhere in the world. At the heart of our project lies a harbor. And a harbor is quite large. It's 9 acres under one roof. Now, people ask me, why so big? The reason it's big is that we have to get to a critical mass quickly. There are lots of little shrimp farms across the United States. But in that process, they do not make an impact on the marketplace or have any chance of replacing the stuff that's imported. Our shrimp farm is 9 acres. We have 256 of these tidal basins. And we will harvest 153 million shrimp a year across 9 different sizes. That's about 7 million pounds. And to do that, To feed those 75 million shrimp that are at any average time are inside the harbor, we will need 15 million pounds of feed. And that feed today, over 45% of it is made up of soybean meal and soybean concentrates and extracts. One of the things we're most proud of in our laboratory, we are the first ever to feed corn to shrimp at a significant level. We're up to 300 pounds in every ton of feed. Comes from good Minnesota corn. So you can see that we also use hard red wheat. We have lots of specialty byproducts as well that we use to grow the shrimp. Representative Swinsky mentioned some of the impact, the economic impact. We commissioned the University of Minnesota Extension Service to do a study for us. If we build a harbor, what kind of economic impact it would be? And they were able to get it down to a five-county area. There's five counties listed, but that's just for example. The harbor's so big, they think five counties will be impacted. Again, $48 million of economic contribution and $14 million of labor dollars going into that. On an ongoing basis, the harbor will have a $30 million impact year in, year out. 124 people will be indirectly and directly employed by the harbor with over $6 million. One of the things that came out of the Extension Service study that really stunned me personally is they projected that one harbor and one harbor only could impact the price of soybeans by 5 to 15 cents a bushel. And our plan is to build as many harbors as we can in Minnesota. In the hub, there's also employment and opportunities there. There we have our pilot plant in Ballaton. We already have 17 employees in Ballaton that work on the shrimp on a daily basis, and we're going to add to that. We anticipate that a hatchery will employ over 20 people. We're going to build a genetics facility. That will be 10. And today we are working. We have a memo of understanding to take a vacant USDA plant in Marshall, Minnesota, and retrofit it for our first processing facility. We believe that facility could handle one or two harbors. That we're looking at probably 60 employees to man that. And of course, there'll be a sales and marketing organization as well. The last item, real quickly, those of you familiar with the shrimp, has a shell on it, right? Okay? And when you ate your shrimp, you threw that shell away. Shame on you for doing that. Because that shell contains a compound, a natural polymer, called chitin. And that chitin can be further processed into another natural polymer called chitosan. And chitosan is a compound that's used across a multitude of industries, from wastewater treatment plants to cosmetics to medical device and pharmaceutical. And because of the way we grow the shrimp, our molts, our chitosan is particularly valuable because it's referred to as being pristine. We control the water habitat. We control the nutrition of the shrimp. Therefore, our chitosan is going to be pure. We're already working with companies to turn our chitosan into medical device and pharmaceutical grade chitosan. We are just at the beginning of this. Chitosan is a natural hemostat. The person we're working with today is developing battlefield bandages from our chitosan because it stops bleeding almost immediately. We are just on the cusp of this and understanding what is, but we're the only system in the world that can collect the molts because it goes out with the waste stream and we have a system to separate the molts from the rest of the waste stream. So there's yet another industry developing around our harbors. Every once in a while I have to remind my crew that we're in the shrimp business and not in the chitosan business. They get pretty excited about this. This is a Minnesota effort. And I'd like to recognize some of the Minnesota companies that have helped us. Pentair is a Minnesota-based company that supplies us with pumps and plumbing equipment. Action Track, maybe you're aware of them out of Marshall. They're the wonderful people that develop the track chairs for disabled people to get out in the outdoors. They have developed and building for us our robotic feeders to travel up and down the tidal basins. Very exciting. Sealy here in the Twin Cities, a plastics firm has helped us. HMI is a local engineering firm from Marshall, and they have agreed in principle to fabricate for us the water management apparatus that we need to run the tidal basin. They will probably have to build a small factory in southwest Minnesota to build our apparatus. New Vision Co-op down in the Worthington Brewster area has stepped forward and said, we want to learn. how to make shrimp feed, and they are already making preparations to expand their production facility to do that. And on the bottom, last but not least, is Novatek. Novatek's out of Wilmer, Minnesota. Novatek's famous for the de-beaking and detailing of poultry across the world. They claim that no production turkey in the world, everyone is touched by their equipment. We asked them if they could build us new equipment for processing shrimp. For example, members of the committee, there's no machine in the world that beheads a shrimp. Today, in those outside of those ponds that you saw in the pictures, all the beheading is done by hand. They have to let the shrimp age, as they put it. They call it aging. We would call it rotting. And so they can get the head off, pop it off with their thumbs. A month ago, Novatek delivered to our research center the first prototype beheading machine in the world, and we were stunned. They're onto the shell, so we can get that shell off the shrimp as well. So this is a, without a doubt, a Minnesota effort to make this happen. Real quickly in the bill, you'll say, why 69 cents? Where did you come up with that number? Real simply, real quickly, it is the variance between the average price of shrimp at any given time and the lowest price that could be that was recorded in that three-year period. So it wasn't a made-up number. It has a foundation to it. So why should you do this? All the things that are in front of you, I listened with great interest to the previous presentations. We have an opportunity here, folks, to build a completely new industry in Minnesota that does not compete with anything that's already here. We have developed and validated the technology. A Minnesota company holds this technology. We dominate the U.S. We can dominate the U.S. shrimp aquaculture industry. We will consume million pounds of commodities. We can create hundreds and someday thousands of jobs. Rural out-state development obviously is an opportunity. And we ask you to encourage the investment today. The money doesn't come to the food shrimp company. It comes to the investors that will build these harbors as the means of production. Thank you so much for your attention this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Zubel. The population of Balaton. Now, what is the population of Balaton? Do you know?
I think it's 600.
Yeah, 600 people.
Yeah, traffic's terrible in the morning.
Yeah, right. And, you know, that's my point. You employ 17 people in a very small rural community, and so things like that are very exciting as well. So, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wondering if Representative Sudinski is thinking of getting involved in this industry at some point. No, I mean later on. What I'm getting at is I wanted to see, like, Bubba Sweets.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, Mr. Chair. I might be willing to bring some shrimp for a cocktail fight.
Representative Erdahl, was that your question?
I just want to know if we're going to be able to.
All right. Representative Barr.
Trump question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Zubel, you mentioned the soybean, the feed, the soybeans and corn. Could you, especially with the soybean part, is this like after you've pressed it for oil or biodiesel, is this an app you'd be using the after product or the from some other process, or using the whole bean and the whole corn, kernel of corn? Just I kind of wanted to get how that fit in there.
Sure. Mr. Zubel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm not the nutritionist here. We use a soybean meal, so it has been crushed. And then we're also experimenting with products that are soy concentrates, which we believe have some of the fatty oils in it as well.
Okay. Representative Clark.
Just a quick question. Is any of the feed and therefore the produce going to be organic, or is it all going to be GMO?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we certainly can't use organic feed if it was available. Our biggest concern with organic, because we are adaptable to that, but a reliable supply and enough quantity to do it would be an issue for us.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mrs. Zubel, you had indicated that perhaps this is a large operation, and you're clearly very motivated and very passionate about it and would like to move it forward, but I am concerned about the small producers. I actually have a producer of a shrimp who has a small shrimp facility that's located just outside of my district where I used to represent, and I'm just wondering about people who are currently and growing their production, how how this is going to impact them. I guess sometimes it seems like it makes sense for us to help the small producers to grow and to be able to diversify versus supporting the large producers. So I just wanted a comment from you on that.
Representative Swazinski. Mr. Chair, I can maybe step in on that a little bit. So this bill does not stand alone. So this bill is some of the production incentive, but we also have a few tax provisions that help move shrimp production in with aquatic fish aquaculture when it comes to property taxes and that egg classification, but also from a sales tax standpoint. So as any shrimp business within the state of Minnesota is looking to expand their business, expand whatever they're doing from a sales tax perspective on the construction materials of expanding that, that would apply, that is one piece of this bill that would apply to every single shrimp producer in the state.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, thank you, Representative Swazinski. I am aware of those other bills as well because we heard those yesterday. But another question, I guess, regarding the proposal and what, if you do capture more of the market, what is the likelihood for you to maybe push out those smaller markets? I mean, this is likely to grow. So is there... do you have just, I guess I am concerned about the balance and the diversity of being able to have some small producers as well as large. Yours, clearly you have the ability to have this patent and do all these things, and clearly the R&D so is going to grow. So a couple of things I guess I'd like to know is just how you see you working with small producers. And then number two, if you don't get this from the state, do you move forward?
Who would like to take that? Mr. Zabel?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the question. First of all, just to be clear, we have no animosity against the small producers. The U.S. shrimp market is 1.6 billion pounds. One of our harbors at 7 million pounds, as big as that sounds, is 0.37% of the market. Our work that we are attempting to do, that we are going to produce shrimp to enter into the general shrimp market, the frozen food shrimp and also food service shrimp. The smaller farms generally have a local market. They sell their shrimp locally. So we don't see any conflict with what we're doing and what they're doing. As far as working with them, we are already being contacted by many of the small farms to take advantage of our nutrition research for the shrimp, and once we have a hatchery built, we can actually more effectively and efficiently supply them with post larva than what they're getting today. Today they got to get their post larva from southern Florida and southern Texas. So we see ourselves here as an opportunity to foster the entire industry of shrimp. We are going for a much larger segment. And part of that, so you understand this, ladies and gentlemen, the committee, you have to have this production to be able to support genetics, to support a hatchery, to support processing. You have to have a critical mass of shrimp. So that's our approach, and we're hoping we can help the small shrimp producers in any way we can.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And then on the production incentive piece, so the dollars that you're requesting, what would happen if the state does not provide that to you?
Mr. Zabel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the business will go on. We'll seek the investors. We'll seek the opportunity to build harbors here in the upper Midwest. Nothing will stop us from the project and what we intend to do. We were hoping with this legislation that you could encourage investment here in Minnesota in these harbors, Minnesota investors. Our intention and the work that we're doing is that we are not going to the East or West Coast to get the money to build these harbors. We're actually going to go to the local communities and ask the fundraising to come from the grassroots up. John Nakamas, our president emeritus, is very sensitive about this. He calls it economic leakage, that we generate all this capital from our produce here in the upper Midwest, and somehow the money goes to the coast. And rather than do that, keep the money here, add value to our commodities right here, and build the industry here. And why Minnesota? This is where the feed is. This is where those soybeans and corn and hard red wheat is located here. We brought the shrimp to the feed.
Representative Poppy? We're going to look for another room for this evening as well. Representative, so we can continue debate. Representative Hansen? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have two questions. I'll go relatively quick, and maybe to the testifier. So where does the water come from, and where does it go?
Mr. Zabel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the water will come from the local municipality. For example, the two locations that we've identified to date for harbors are Marshall and Laverne, Minnesota. In the case of Laverne, they just got the Lewis and Clark pipeline system through there, so they have ample water, and then Marshall also has brought new wells online, so they will have the water. So we need the water to start the harbor. But the harbor itself has a complete wastewater treatment plant on the premises of the harbor. So it is to our best economic interest, in addition to the environmental concerns, to recycle every drop of water that we can. We will RO it, and we have to add salt to it. This is a marine animal, so we've got to put the salt in the water. So our idea is to get all that water back and reuse it over and over again. On an ongoing basis, we will need about 60 to 100,000 gallons a day to maintain the harbor. That's to maintain the human population that's in the harbor, as well as some of the water that we're going to lose. We'll never get every drop recycled, but we will endeavor to do that, sir.
Representative Hansen.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe this is a question for you. This has a pretty big price tag, $5 million a year, and you know, we've heard other testimony. I think we're going to hear more of worthy projects, and I know the targets will be coming soon, and I'm not sure how this all happened. I think we've, you know, the rumors are out there of cuts or freezes, but $5 million a year, along with everything else, I see people in the room that are asking for projects that are directly related to people, for urban agriculture. There's other things that may be safety, that there's additional funding that's requested. And here we have this interesting and intriguing private business opportunity that is similar but not exactly the same to what we funded before. I think when we did the ethanol payments before, that was a more broad-based jumpstart an industry rather than having one particular ethanol plant coming and asking for it. So maybe this is the question for you, is where do we find the money, and what's the priority, and when do we see the budget?
So, Representative Hansen, as far as being the chair of the committee, anybody who asks for a hearing, I will grant that hearing. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to pass or fail, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be funded. It simply means that we're going to, as the chair, I'm going to pay the courtesy to the individuals who request hearings and ask the questions. We have been hearing bills, I think they total up to about $62 million in new spending. And quite frankly, we cannot afford them all. And so then we're going to have to determine what those priorities are, and that's why we have listening sessions or hearings on bills. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate your approach on hearing bills, because that is not broad-based. I actually think you know that. Hearing bills, particularly from the minority side, we appreciate that because it gives Minnesotans an opportunity. So I guess we would like to be in your shoes to be distributing the money, but on the other hand, it's the target and where do the dollars go that I guess we'll soon see. I think it's important for people to know that not everything can be funded or will be funded, and this is important to give these opportunities. So Representative Poppy is our lead, and I would encourage that, you know, as you move forward, to be working with her to make sure that we continue this bipartisan effort of hearing everybody's bills and working to get the best for Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative
who's up. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And at 11 o'clock at night, I sometimes don't particularly love that attitude of hearing every bill, just so you know, because I've been here a couple late nights already this week. I have three or four questions, pretty much straight up forward. How many employees at the end of the 5 years are you looking at having? Is it 100 employees? Because I did the quick numbers. It looked like about 150 employees by the time it was done. What's your total projected employment after 5 years?
And before you answer, we are going to have a hard break at 20 after because we have a testifier that has to testify and then go to work. Okay, so Mr. Zabel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that would be 150 employees would be the One Harbor and the Hub group.
Right.
Okay? In 5 years, our business plan is to have three harbors operational. So there'd be another 120 on top of that, 270 of direct employees involved.
So,
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is about a $55 million incentive program. Dollar figures are, you know, that's a number that everybody gets to use. DigiKey up in Confederate Falls just came through the Jobs Committee, which I don't quite understand why this one isn't going to the Jobs Committee also, but 1,000 employees, about $60 million. So there's a balance here. You're starting a whole new industry. They're building, they're expanding from 3,500 employees to 4,500 employees up in Deep River Falls. So we have to make some decisions there. I'm uncomfortable with the way you limited this by making production not before July 1st, 2019. That does get to the small shrimp farmers. I'm uncomfortable with that, just so you know, and I don't think that's fair to everybody. The other, and I don't think you can do it here by 20 after, so I'm not going to ask you to, I still do not understand how that 69-cent production works. Are we paying it at the low end, at the high end, or no matter what? So at some point, I'd like you offline, and certainly you can give a better explanation to the committee administrator that he can pass it out to the rest of us. But I've got a ton of questions about that I just don't, I don't understand how it works. And I'm not saying it's a bad idea or a good idea. I just don't understand it. So having done economic development for 20 years here, I suspect I may not be the only one that doesn't understand that.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to hear this twice. It is an exciting project. I see the potential in it. When I look at the funding mechanism, it mimics, I think, what we've done with ethanol and actually with the working lands. With ethanol, there was also the side benefit of having improved air quality, because ethanol is a clean fuel. And then with working lands, there's potential for improved water quality. I was wondering, is there anything, is there a secondary impact of this production or of this effort that would merit a larger public interest beyond the economic development?
Representative Swazinski?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, so, you know, if you look at U.S. consumption of shrimp, 80% of it is imported from either Ecuador or Southeast Asia. So just the basis of growing it locally so that, you know, the market is much closer to production, you would have that environmental savings of not the transportation that you normally would have across the ocean. That would be one, just offhand, is one that I would first look to. And just from a health standpoint, just the difference in production, as Mr. Zabel spoke to with antibiotics and some of the other uses, and just the general tone of the difference in production, I think is a big environmental impact globally.
Representative Johnson, final question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Then my other question is, this is a This is a privately held company. Is the company prepared to share who is involved interest-wise? You know, who are the investors and who are the, you know, the, some of the, which I assume is private information about the company itself, to so the public would know who this money would be supporting?
Mr. Zabel or Representative Swazinski, who wants to take that question? Mr. Zabel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, today the entire investment that's been made in shrimp, which is now well over $10 million, has been made by Relco, and we don't have any other investors yet. We are in the process of developing the financial documents to get investors. We anticipate a harbor will be owned by thousands of investors, thousands of investors.
Okay. Representative Johnson, I'm going to give you one more chance for a follow-up, then we're going to move on to
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, is the company prepared to make public the investors in that company that would be involved with the project?
Mr. Zabel.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the rules around that. I can't, it'll be a private placement, so I'd have to yield to my counsel on that and what the rules are. We have no reason not to share it, but I don't know what the rules are.
Right. Representative Swazinski, you have the final word.
Mr. Chair, members, I just appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee. I do believe that this is probably one of the biggest opportunities animal agriculture has had in the last 70 years in the state of Minnesota with this development. I really feel that your support would be appreciated, and I appreciate your time. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
All right. Thank you so much, Representative Swazinski, and to the testifier, thank you also for traveling in.
Thank you.
And with that, again, no action on that because it's not in the jurisdiction of our committee. So. All right. We have, let's see, four more bills. Representative Clark, do we also have Representative Johnson in here yet?
Yes.
Hi, Representative Johnson. Representative Clark, you have one testifier that has to get to work. Is that correct? Can we bring up that testifier? Representative Johnson, we're going to bring up that one testifier, all right, that must get to work. And let's take that testimony. And Representative Johnson, if you could just, how many testifiers do you have? Do you know off the top of your head, or is it just you?
Two.
Two, okay. So we'll be sure to get to them also, okay? So we'll move in, Representative Clark, and like I said, your testifier. So this is, Representative Clark, is this House File 1463?
2076, Mr. Chairman.
All right, Representative Clark moves House File 2076 to be held over for possible inclusion. Now, we have, what do we have, about 40 minutes, okay, total? And Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are several witnesses for this bill that deal with several different projects, and I appreciate you making opportunity for us to present the person who has to leave, that several people in that position, and it means a lot because these are people who are leaving their jobs. So do we present the whole bill in your case, or do you only want to hear this one testifier and then we come back to that?
Well, so if we don't get everything done by noon, we'll come back this evening. And so, Representative Clark, if your testifiers are able to...
Be short and sweet.
That would be wonderful, right? But I don't want to cut anybody off. That's my point. So, to your testifier, please state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin. And welcome.
I'm DeVolis, DJ Architecture, and I'm representing the East Phillips Improvement Coalition for the development of an urban indoor agricultural project.
Well,
so... Chairman and committee members, thank you for coming to my schedule. I appreciate it a lot. So thanks for being so kind for this. I have to speak before a large group at noon. I'll be a little late, but this is very important to everyone here, so I want to make sure of the time. I've had the privilege of working at a women's hospital in Kabul, Afghanistan, working in Sandtown in Baltimore, Maryland, and many other communities around the United States and globally. And the one thing I found in common with these communities is the essence of food and urban agriculture and raising the food and finding that quality. It's the one thing that's been consistent. What's been put together by Representative Clark is actually a project both on the south side with EPIC and then Sweetie Pie, which is going to be up in North Minneapolis, so sort of bracketing both sides of the Twin Cities. And as you know, urban indoor agriculture has been growing rapidly. It's become an operation that's really been expanding a lot of bases. And as you know, restaurants in Minneapolis is looking for specialized foods, specialized products, certain type of arugula, certain type of mushrooms, those and so forth, and the best way to deliver this on your own basis is our agriculture. And that has been increasing quite rapidly and growing in this location, actually bodes well because it's on the Green Line Transit. It's near downtown Minneapolis, there's a lot of major food productions are, and it serves a very community that really creates entry-level employment, but also creates an ongoing industry. The location is the old Roof Depot site, which is right off Hiawatha, which the city of Minneapolis owns. So we already have a partnership developed with the city of Minneapolis. So we have a site located. The existing building is a 400,000 square foot former Sears warehouse. That is large site, has a bulk and volume.
While he's getting the next, Ripson Clark, is that the location that you showed me when we visited your the district that you serve?
Mr. Chairman, both you and Representative Anderson had a chance to see it from, I think, from across the street. At that time, it wasn't owned by the city. Now it is.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry. Please.
No, absolutely. And it would be a shared project. Minneapolis wants to increase its public works, law works department. We would share the building. And so the idea is that either we have ownership or we'd have a competitive lease from the city of Minneapolis which operates this facility. That's sort of quite here. And also we have a larger comprehensive network because it's also on the major bikeway that's been established across Minneapolis. It's known as the Greenway. So it's really between the nexus of the Green Line, Hiawatha, the bikeway, which really affords a connection that works out with an area. The other thing this project has is we are a finalist for a Department of Energy solar grant. So I already have a leg up on that, and we're right now in what I call a finalist in a beauty pageant to put this together, and now we're going for the large prize on this. So we've already been able to attract the federal government to step up in place of this project also. So the combination is we will develop an indoor facility which would be for startups to allow entry level to the neighborhood and for sophisticated businesses such as Alaska May who wants to deal with it also, and then Epic would be the managing entity to run this, and the $3 million would allow us to do the renovations of the building to get it occupied for these types of uses, and then outside there would be $3 million of private dollars that would fund this project also. We believe, and again, that we'd probably create about 200 jobs. There would be both short-term and long-term, and create jobs, like I mentioned, would be entry-level, and then jobs that would be sophisticated, because some of it would be controlled environment, indoor agriculture, some of it would be hydroponics, you know, small version of the shrimp process you heard before, and some would be as simple as hoop houses that extend the growing season. So it's ability that someone with the least knowledge in capital and some with the most capital can be part of it. So really sort of bracket all ranges of income and opportunity. So that's a quick overview of the project, and we're excited to be here, and we're excited to be associated with groups such as Epic and what they put together. So thank you again for accommodating my schedule.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your day to come in here and testify. I greatly appreciate it. So with that, Representative Clark, you have another testifier.
It comes to be very short. I
promise
here to endorse it and describe a little bit more.
All right, please state your name for the record and begin.
My name is Carol Bass. I'm the chair of East Phillips Improvement Coalition. The facilities in our neighborhood, and our issues have been, well, as a chair of the neighborhood, I'm very concerned about the challenged neighborhood. We have many refugees, many immigrants, and we're trying to get them locked into the system, and. The basic people, many people of color that don't have good jobs. The jobs here are wonderful because you don't have to have a college degree, don't have to have expensive clothes, you could walk to work, it's really helpful. So we're really looking forward to creating a food production center in the middle of a food desert. I'll stop with that.
Thank you so much, Ms. Bass, for your testimony. Yes, please state your name for that.
Hello, Chairman and Committee. My name is Tammy Skinaway. I'm a representative of Little Earth of United Tribes in South Minneapolis. What I see out of this project as a positive thing is, you know, that we're dealing with poverty and addiction, and a lot of the problem is people don't have anything to do. So I see this as an educational opportunity. Transportation issues are a problem with getting to work for people and sustaining employment. So I see this as a great opportunity to be close to home and to also get the kids involved. And not only that, there are two main corridors, the Hiawatha Avenue as well as Cedar Avenue, to downtown, and I see this as an opportunity to unify our city and invite other communities in to learn.
Ms. Skinaway?
Yes.
So we were met a young man. We toured, I think it was a medicine garden around the Little Earth
yes.
area, correct?
Yes.
Very bright and talented individual, and it was a fun trip. So I think that was part of our little tour, too, right, Representative Clark?
It is, Mr. Chairman. And next day, you're going to hear from Mishkivi Gitagan, which is a Ojibwe for medicine garden.
Okay.
Yes.
Wonderful.
And you all are all welcome to come visit anytime.
Thank you for that, because that was an eye-opener when we did come out and toured through this. And I've learned a tremendous amount about urban ag and stuff. So thank you for taking the time to educate us as legislators.
You're welcome. You know, health is an important thing, and we all, food is medicine.
Right.
And so it's good to educate the world.
You are what you eat, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark.
So that's the south side of the farm. Now I'd like to ask folks from north side
okay.
who are in the same bill. And you'll notice, so that's Michael Cheney is with Project Certify. And he's also bringing Alyssa Banks, who's one of the other folks who's going to bring in some resources. You'll notice in each of these bills, we're asking for funding that has to do with structural development. The next bill you're going to hear is more about programming and so on. But in this case, and one of the structures in here is another bill that's on the agenda today from East Metro, Representative Sheldon Johnson's bill.
Right.
So we're not going to talk about that. We'll leave that to him. But if you actually look at the House bill, it has those three projects, the south side that you just heard from, the north side, east side of St. Paul, and we found out we didn't need to have the Duluth one in because they've already received their funding. So I'd like to turn this over to Michael Cheney.
So, Mr. Cheney, welcome.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Please.
It's always a pleasure to see you this time of year.
Right? You know the routine. State your name for the record, who you represent, and begin.
My name is Michael Cheney. I'm with a nonprofit in North Minneapolis called Project Sweetie Pie.
Welcome, sir.
We've been over here so much in the last 4 years, I think we must have worn a cow path between here and North Minneapolis. So
I like it.
But we're glad to be back. I was also glad to hear the comments earlier today from the gentleman about the shrimp farming, because that's one of the projects that we want to innovate in North Minneapolis at North High. We were approached by a research company in Chicago called Interest that wanted to work with Project Sweetie Pie in North Minneapolis, work with another program called Near Mentoring in Atlanta to do shrimp growing. And they have some innovative technology, and so we applied together for a USDA SAR grant, and we're waiting to see what happens with that. What that would mean is they have some small technology, limited space, limited expense up front that would grow shrimp farming at North High as a research demonstration site.
So, Mr. Cheney, how did you connect?
Well, because, again, this is urban farming is nothing that is new to North Minneapolis or Minneapolis at large. This is the changing face of agriculture all across the country. And so what I think that if, and so some people had heard about us, we had some mutual friends that were involved, and so they wanted to start this technology. They were interested in marginalized communities, and so they had heard about the work that we were doing in North Minneapolis in concert with Appetite for Change, the North Market, Worth Co-op, and just a myriad of remarkable innovative projects in terms of building infrastructure in North Minneapolis. So they contacted us. Of course, we consented, so keep your fingers crossed for us. We soon may be doing some shrimp farming of our own right here in Minneapolis. I am going to, from the previous presentator, I am going to steal a little bit of his language, economic leakage. because that's very critical in terms of that's really what has been happening historically in terms of urban residents and not really being allowed to play in the sandbox with other growers. And so what we've really been trying to do is change that paradigm from how can we convert communities that historically have lacked resources, have lacked infrastructure, and how can we change it from a culture of consumers to a culture of production. I think that the organizations and folks that you've heard about today are all really seeking that. How can we keep resources in the communities in which we represent? It really saddened me with the Farm to School bill that money is being spent across the country for feeding of young people all across this nation, and yet young people in North Minneapolis, who by and large are the students in the Minneapolis school system, but somehow or another they're cut out of the equation. The same people that are growing the food, are eating the food, ought to be growing the food, ought to be receiving some kind of compensation for their efforts. And so unless we as thought leaders, as community leaders, as legislators, until we have the courage to really do something transformative and involve all residents of the state of Minnesota to be involved in urban farming, i.e. involved in agriculture and the new face of agriculture. This greenhouse that we are interested in acquiring, like I said, we've been here for now, but I think this is our fourth year. When we first came here, we said we wanted to get involved in urban farming. And so we've been working diligently at that the last 4 years to really, at that first hearing, Representative Hamilton, you know, told us that he says, this is great. This is cutting-edge legislation. Let's move forward to get this done. There's no reason for us to wait. In fact, if we want to stay leaders in legislation, then I would point out to all my Minnesota ag legislators that in 2016, Senator Stabenow announces the Urban Ag Act of 2016. Now, we can either be innovators, we can be leaders, or we can be second in the lineup. But I believe that as Minnesota Ag, that there is a changing demographics in urban communities, like communities of color, that we want to play in the sandbox. We're here to say that we are interested in becoming part of the changing landscape, and that with your involvement, you know, it's pretty hard to grow a farm if you don't have a barn. It's pretty hard to plant crops if you don't have a tractor. So the resources that we're asking you here today will go toward creating that. There's nothing new about it. The legislation here, this is a project called Victus Farms, and I have in front of all of you here, I have both of these documents, this from the USDA Senator Stabenow, as well as I provided you with this Victus Farms. It was for $1.5 million. And the mission, in addition to the production, and this is up, by the way, in the city of Silver Bay, Minnesota. In addition to the production and sale of fish, fruits, and vegetables, the facility will be used for applied research, educational training for future systems operators, and community education aimed at communicating the value of local and sustainable food and energy production. At that time, the Minnesota State Legislature, maybe some of you were involved in that decision, you dedicated $300,000 toward that project. And so we, too, are Americans. We, too, are farmers. And we, too, need resources to build our visions. Without vision, the people shall perish.
Thank you, Mr. Cheney. One more testifier, correct? Please state your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you all today. My name is Alyssa Banks, and I work with Greater Twin Cities United Way in the metro area. I work as a program manager there in the area of food security and also hunger relief. And this issue of addressing food security and hunger within the metro area as well as within our urban centers is a really dear and important cause and issue to me. Michael Cheney mentioned some important work that has been happening within North Minneapolis, and I wanted to just provide a little bit of context about some of the work that we've been doing at Greater Twin Cities United Way to help address this issue of food security. We know that food insecurity and hunger is a frequent result of poverty and also can lead to poor health and poor health outcomes. However, we believe that food security also ensures access, both physical and economic, to sufficient healthy and culturally appropriate food on a consistent basis. We're excited about some of the new work that we've been able to launch in North Minneapolis around addressing food insecurity, specifically from a community-based perspective. We're about to launch a new program addressing community food insecurity, looking at a range of different projects and programs that can take a holistic approach to long-term solutions to addressing hunger and food insecurity with some of our most vulnerable populations in that area. We know that in order to improve the food environment, that support is not only just needed for programs, but also for infrastructure and urban agricultural opportunities like the one that Michael Cheney has been speaking to in North Minneapolis, as well as East Phillips and the others that are listed in this bill. We're excited to launch this collective effort, but we know that with our support and grant making that we'll be doing in this area starting in early April, it's not sufficient to sustain this kind of work. And so that we hope that others around the metro area as well as across the state will be able to leverage the investment that we are committing to this work to move and advance it forward. I thank you for your time and your consideration.
Well, thank you so much for your testimony as well. Members, any questions for the testifiers? No? All right, seeing none. Representative Clark, final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think we've heard the case for the investment, why we need it, and I'm going to leave it at that. I think each of these witnesses are available for further discussion, and we've been invited to come and visit the places, too, in both the north side and the south side. So I appreciate, Mr. Chairman, the opportunity to put this into the overall bill that we're taking forward from this committee, correct?
That is correct. The motion is to hold House File 2076 to be held over for possible inclusion. So that's the motion, and House File 2076 is held over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your testimony. Representative Clark, don't go too far away, but because it's right in the same area,
yes.
Representative Johnson, will you please come forward with your testifiers? And Representative Clark, I think what we'll do, because you referred to Representative Johnson, this is in the same area. So let's hear from this. And Representative Johnson, I will move House File 2320. I got to put my glasses on. 2327 be held over for possible inclusion. And Representative Johnson, Representative Clark has another bill up also, right? So to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. We'll try to do it. 10 minutes sound reasonable?
Pardon me?
10 minutes?
5 sounds better.
Okay. I always listen to the chair. This is a bill that funds a grant from the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council to the Metropolitan State University for renovation of a greenhouse. And this building was formerly a state-funded Department of Agriculture Biological Pest Control Research Center. It's been shuttered since 2008. The facility we call the Grow It Center. It'll be a learning hub for scientists, students of all ages, community partners, and urban agriculture. Now, the big thing about this, important to know, is that this project is shovel-ready. Design plans and costs have been completed, and importantly, the partners in this project have worked hard to secure over $250,000 in funding, some of which are time-limited contributions, and continue to seek additional prospects. The state of Minnesota investment would be less than 50%. This is a great project that, again, state-bonded dollars are used to pay for. We have worked hard to secure funding to match, and we'd just like to say a few words about it, and I'll turn it over to the president of Metro State University, President Arthur.
Please, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, who you represent, and it's good to see you again.
Thank you. I am Ginny Arthur, and I'm the president of Metropolitan State University. And because I think our time is limited and it's so important to that you hear from some of the young people who are going to be involved in this work, I'm going to keep my comments very brief. Representative Johnson covered many of, I think, the important background points about this project. So let me talk about what our purpose is with this project. It is to generate and disseminate best practices in sustainable urban agriculture, healthy food production, and access in ecological preservation, and to inspire and prepare the next generation of agriculturalists to address these issues. As Representative Johnson mentioned, the requested state investment of $500,000 represents 45% of our total need. You should have a printed summary in front of you of our efforts to secure the remaining 55%. Already, we have support from CHS, the City of St. Paul, and two private foundations. The project promises to expand community-engaged research opportunities for our university students and working with the youth in our community. And I think it's important to know that there is already a laddered pathway in place to a four-year degree in this field, a 1+1+2 degree program between Dakota County Technical College, Inver Hills Community College, and Metropolitan State. I also want you to know the university is committed to raise public and private funding for this reconstruction, to assume annual operations and maintenance costs, and to provide a half-time greenhouse manager for the first 2 years. And we will continue cultivating partnerships with community organizations, including with Future Farmers of America and Urban 4-H. So now I'm going to turn the mic over to the most important spokespeople.
Wonderful. Thank you. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin.
My name is Jacqueline Jandro, and I represent Urban Roots. We are the nonprofit organization over on the east side that would be sharing access to this Growit Center. I am the Market Garden Program Coordinator of this of Urban Roots, and I come to you as both a teacher, educator. I currently hold my teaching license and a farmer. And when I've seen, in my 10 years of experience in this field, when I've seen the most meaningful learning in youth, in people, is when they're out and in our field, literally with their hands in the dirt, experiencing the science, experiencing the theory that we teach. And so this Growit Center would allow us a year-round opportunity to engage our youth and community in agricultural and science education. So Urban Roots, we employ 60 youth. Last year, we engaged 3,600 community members. On less than half an acre, grew 10,500 pounds of produce. We're an organization that likes to that would like to share with you, the real stars of the people who benefit from our program here, youth that we employ.
So, who do you have with you?
We have Imogene Silver.
My name is Imogene Silver. I am an intern at Urban Roots. I've been at Urban Roots for 4 years now. This is going to be my fifth. And I'm just here to express my support for this project and how much working at Urban Roots has impacted my life. It's taught me about everything that you need to do from preparing the soil to growing the fruit to producing it. And learning all those things has definitely changed my relationship with food. And it's really important to me. And when I tell people about all this great work that I'm doing at Urban Roots and how much I like it, they always ask me, well, what do you do in the winter? And, you know, with the Minnesota climate, we're not permitted to grow things in the winter. And by having this grow it greenhouse, that would definitely increase our opportunities and our abilities to connect with the community and teach them about agriculture.
Thank you, Ms. Silver. That was fantastic. So who's the next testifier? Please state your name for the record and begin, please.
Hello, my name is Tony. I've been working at Urban Roots for 5 years. I'm part of the Market Garden Program, so I help manage five gardens around the east side of St. Paul. So where it started was that my grandma, she used to do farming, so when I was little, I always see my grandma having all these produce, and I was just wondering, where did my grandma get these vegetables from? So that was like sort of the tip of the iceberg of learning what agriculture is about. So when I was working at Urban Roots, I get to see what's under that iceberg. So Urban Roots has changed me a lot in my past 5 years. I learned basic job skills, and it's not just a gardening job. It's more than that. I learned how to learn how what it takes to become a farmer. It's not easy, I'll tell you that. And I get to see the process of growing vegetables and then eating it on my plate. So that makes me appreciate the work that I do. And I believe the Grow It Center will be a good change for my work experience and education so that I can teach other youth in the community about what agriculture is about. I want others to learn about the environment and agriculture through my experience at Urban Roots.
That was fantastic, Mr. Tony. Right? That was fantastic. Thank you for your testimony there. And do we have any questions, members? Do we have any questions? So, well, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Oh, we do have one from Representative Juergens.
That's Tony Juergens, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Representative Tony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quick question for Tony and Imogene. How has this helped you? Do you find yourself that you eat healthier, that you know, maybe before you got involved with these programs, that you maybe would grab a bag of chips instead of vegetables? I mean, just tell me how that may have changed for you.
Ms. Silver?
For me, it's seeing the process of growing produce has definitely made me appreciate food a lot more. And also being a part of Urban Roots, I've learned a lot about cooking with vegetables and with the produce that we're growing. So I would say that for sure, being here has definitely made me want to opt more for the healthy choice and made me appreciate the work that goes into, like a farmer does, to bring the food from the farm to the table.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Mr. Tony.
For me, Urban Roots has changed me a lot, so I plan to major in environmental science in college to pursue my academics. So at Urban Roots, I have learned a lot of the practical steps, and now I just want to know what the science behind it. So by going through that field, I'll be able to learn more about what the work that I do. And I guess from a perspective of, if I weren't not to be working here, I would have not learn a lot about healthy eating. So like now I make bad decisions of eating, so every time I go to the store or like, you know, fast food restaurants, I don't like go there anymore because I learn about healthy eating here. So that kind of changed the way I view and eat things.
So, well, thank you. Representative Johnson, you sure know how to pick your testifiers, I tell you. So with that, any final words, Representative Johnson?
I appreciate your time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, thank you so much for bringing this forward as well. So I will renew my motion that House File 2327 will be held over for possible inclusion. Members, here's what we're going to do, is that no one needs this room after us. So we're going to extend the time because I really want to get through the testifiers and not have them to come back. Representative Clark. And so what we'll do, we do have one testifier that traveled a couple hours to be here for Representative Poston's bill. How much time do you need on your bill?
10 minutes.
Can you do it in five?
I'll try.
All right, let's do it in five, and then we'll meet the remaining time. Representative Clark, is that okay?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate it. I have some people who...
Absolutely, and we want to hear them, so I'll stay, most definitely stay here. And I know others may have some committee time or whatever. But I want to hear the testimony as well. So we will keep this room, and we'll get through the testifiers. And we've heard Representative Poston remove House File 2277 to be held over for possible inclusion. And with that, to you, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2277 is a wolf livestock conflict prevention pilot program. and we're asking for $200,000 in 2018 and $2,000 in 2019 to provide grant money for this prevention program. Grants will be administered and monitored by the Commissioner of Agriculture, and preventions include things like guard animals, wolf barriers, fences, pens, wolf deterrent lights and alarms, and calving and lambing shelters. And I have a testifier that can talk to some of these prevention methods, and we'll go right to the testifiers.
Wonderful. Thank you. State your name for the record.
My name is Mary Falk. Can you hear me okay?
We can, okay. Yes.
My husband and I, excuse me, operate a farm 200 acres with sheep, goat, and cows that free range in the grazing season. And half of our land is rustic wild refuge, wildlife refuge of sorts. We're connected by waterways to the upper St. Croix Wild Riverway. So through a series of wildlife corridors of water, wildlife journey through the riverway and through our farm, which is really great. We get to see a lot of cool things, but predators follow those. So we're basically a highway, and if we didn't do anything about it, we would be running a buffet table for predators. So just briefly, I'm going to try and talk as fast as I can so you guys can hear fast, you know. So we're basically, I sat here and listened to some really interesting things about urban farming and food security. This is just another form of food security. I have three sons. They're all hunters, along with my husband and myself. And we're lucky that we live where we do, so we can, you know, supply a lot of our own food in the freezer. This last fall, my son was hunting. He was up in a rather high tree stand. And during his first 2 hours, he watched black bear come through and also wolves. And what was really neat is he was able to watch the bear and the wolves. And as they passed by under his stand and then moved on towards the farm, he was able to hear our guard dogs go ballistic and repel the predators and move them on down the road. And that's the whole point. It's a lot easier to prevent a problem than to stop a problem. Needless to say, he did not get a deer that morning. So. But the way the guard dogs work, all canine are territorial. That includes guard dogs, that includes wolves, that includes coyotes. And the guard dogs work by speaking the language of the other canines. So when they smell a wolf, or they hear a wolf, or they see a wolf, or coyotes, they sound the alarm, and they're telling them, you're on my property, keep moving, you're trespassing. And since it is the guard dog's territory, these other canines respect that and move on. And the issue is you just have to have enough dogs. And when you upset that natural balance is when you start to really have a problem. Within dog packs, coyote packs, and predator wolf packs, you have only one alpha bitch is usually allowed to breed. And when you start randomly shooting off for whatever reason, you lose that alpha, then you're going to end up with chaos. And in example, I have a quick story about coyotes. We went for 20 years with no problems. We had a large coyote pack on our property, but as long as they stayed away from the livestock, everything was fine. And they did what they're supposed to do. They went after the mice. My husband would be out raking hay, and the livestock would be 5 acres away and with the guard dogs, no problem, whereas the local coyote alpha would come out of the woods. She'd follow behind my husband's tractor, and she'd jump the mice with her litter as he raked the hay and the mice popped out. And he said it was the coolest thing to watch. But she was doing what she was supposed to be doing. She's keeping the local rodent population in check. A couple of weeks later, the young man down the road was out hunting, and he happened to get her. And he was so proud. He came by to show us his big catch. And my heart sank because we'd gone for 20 years with no problems with the coyotes, because they teach their litter to stay away, and their litter teaches their next generation to stay away. But then that coyote pack also sets up their own territorial boundary and keeps other coyotes away. It's a big ripple in the pond effect. And within 2 weeks, all chaos broke loose. The neighbor down the road lost 10 sheep, and we had the first attempted attacks on our livestock in 20 years. And thankfully, with our guard dogs, we were able to deter them. But they also act as birth control. I mean, when you have the pack undisturbed, whatever, you end up with the alpha does not allow anything else to breed, and she also kills any other litter that's born. So without this, without the dogs speaking the coyotes' language, without the coyotes speaking their language and the wolves, it just kind of all falls apart. And we've been able to farm for 30 years in the middle of predator pressure that's unbelievable with no attacks, no successful attacks. And these guard dogs are amazing. They're also fun to watch. And I just think that the farmers really need this. They need to understand about the guard dogs, or even I know there's guard donkeys out there. And if they have these tools available to them, it's so much easier than to try to stop a problem that can get way out of control. And so we're just saying, please, farmers need this. We need our own form of food security, so please help.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Peterson, state your name for the record. Do you represent? Begin.
Mr. Chairman, members, Tom Peterson with the Minnesota Farmers Union. And real quickly, we also support House File 2277. And I think everybody has this map that Representative Poston passed out. And it's very interesting and shows kind of the reason for this bill. This map came from myself, too, and we had a meeting in Carlton County 2 weeks ago. It was very well attended. Representative Eklund was there, and we brought this idea. But if you look at this map, it shows the wolf range going from 1977 to where it is to now in 2013, starting in Representative Polson's district, then moving north, and that it's moved down into the cattle range, right? You know, Cass County, Pine County, and you look at where the damage is caused. Also look at know that wolf attacks are hard to prove. So these are verified, you know, a lot of times, as we heard in our meeting last week, that there's nothing left. So after a wolf attack, it's just gone. And so there's many more than what's on here, but it does very well highlight this. We became interested in this idea, too, because there's some federal dollars available, whether they're going to stay available or not, but they require a state match or a state dollars. And so that's another reason for looking at this bill, that Minnesota wasn't able to obtain some of those dollars. And so we've been working with some of the state agencies, either Ag or DNR, to help request some of the funds for this bill, because we do feel it's very important. Again, the big pieces on this are fencing and the guard animals. So there's many things that are allowed, including night guard or sounds. There's a letter in your packet, I think, too, from night guard in Princeton. On our farm, we have night guard. You can see I live in Pine County, which is one of the heavy pieces there as well. So thank you. Two quick things that we would suggest for this, if it were to become law, that there would be some kind of cost share for the farmers, that this would be a cost share type bill, and then also that it would be targeted to some of the really high trafficked areas. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Representative Polston, final word.
Did I make it in 5 minutes?
Nope. No.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Motion failed. I'm just kidding.
Thank you for listening to this bill.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it, and I ask for your support.
And thank you to your testifier for traveling such a long distance. Representative Poston renews his motion to have House File 2277 be held over for possible inclusion. Members, like I said, we're going to stay here and just keep going, okay? No one needs this room instead of coming back tonight. I know Representative Clark has some wonderful testifiers here, and we want to hear from them. So we're going to just keep on moving. Representative Clark will move House File 1461 to be held over for possible inclusion. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
To your bill and to your testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you have heard initially, beginning with your proclamation and issues about urban agriculture and why it's so important. It is a very fast growing part of our community here. And I'm going to invite first the people who haven't had a chance to speak. We've heard from two different sectors and South Minneapolis and North Side, but now we're going to hear from some additional sectors. And I'm going to start with Brown here. Let him introduce himself. He has a couple of different hats. And then we're going to hear from Moshe Gittagon.
Yes.
The farm project. You can sit over here.
All right.
That you mentioned earlier. And then we'll hear from some more of our folks on the north.
So who would like to go first?
Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin.
Sure. Sounds like I'm going first.
All right.
My name is Martin Brown. They call me Farmer Brown down in the neighborhood. I represent Pillsbury United Communities and also the Homegrown Minneapolis Food Policy Council. I'm going to start my testimony out with some numbers. Did you know that only 1% of Minnesota farm operators are people of color? Did you know that the average age of a Minnesota farmer is over 58? And that beginning farmers in Minnesota only account for about 16% of farmers in Minnesota? It's the lowest rate in the Midwest. I hope you know that, because y'all did the report. In urban farming, we actually see these trends flipped on their heads. Young farmers, new farmers, and farmers of color are the majority of urban agriculture practitioners. In my work at Waite House, I support these farmers as they work to secure resources, connect with markets, and learn from each other. In my work at Homegrown Minneapolis, I make the case for land access for agriculture in the city of Minneapolis. From working so closely with urban growers, I can speak to their dedication, their skill, and their meaningful contribution to healthy food access in our city. The demographics of farming statewide have everything to do with land access and investment, and nothing to do with a lack of interest in farming by people of color and young people. I also wear another hat as I speak to you, and that's the hat of the young farmer, Farmer Brown. Although I live in the city now, I'm from rural Minnesota, and farming was part of my life from an early age. Someday, I'd like to go back, and some of my friends have gone back. I've watched as the early wave of urban farmers in my network have gone rural. Stefan Meyer, formerly of Growing Lots Farm, manages 10 acres near Finland. Mike Carlson, formerly of Project Superman, manages over 100 acres of his family land near Mora. Nate Waters, formerly of Stonesville, has a more than 40-acre apple orchard in the Northfield area, and Christina and Rosa of Meshkiki Gitagon are working on a 10-acre farm near Hugo. In one sense, urban farming is a training ground for those who will take over our farming system, urban and rural, as the current operators age out. That does not diminish its value as a food access point for urban communities or a place of community connection. It actually enhances it. As Representative Clark has pointed out to me, my short list of farmers who have gone rural is primarily white and middle class. I believe that this is because the investment is not there to support the people of color who want to farm. I know plenty of people in the South Minneapolis community, Latino folks, young folks, who would love access to rural properties to do more growing. I also believe that when we are investing in farmers of color and beginning farmers, we're investing in the equity of the food system as well as the future of farming and food security in Minnesota. I think there's a demographic shift that has to happen, and supporting urban agriculture is a chance to get out ahead of it. Thank you.
Farmer Brown, where were you from, if you don't mind me asking? You said you grew up in rural Minnesota?
I'm from the Northfield area.
The Northfield, all right. And so someday you want to get back there, huh?
Yes.
You know, it's interesting, those statistics that you were referring to as well, and you're absolutely right. And we need to have various programs to bring people into agriculture. And one of the exciting things that's taken place, at least in the area in which I represent, there's a number of families, they're back in Hmong, and they were in the cities, and like the elders were saying, and when I'm visiting with them, they're saying, we're farmers by nature, right? And they were sharing the story how during or after the Vietnam War, they're brought to the concrete jungles of Minneapolis and St. Paul, right? And they said, we would love to get back to rural areas, more of a setting that they were familiar with, and now they're moving out to the little town of Walnut Grove, and that's pretty cool. So thank you for your...
Rosemont area near me, too.
Yes, very nice. Thank you for your testimony. So who do we have next, Representative Clark?
I'm going to let Joanna Hill introduce herself.
All right.
Hi, my name is Joanna Hill, and I'm here for the Meshkiki Gitagon. And I'm Ojibwe. I'm enrolled in a tribe here in Minnesota called the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. And I've been a part of the Meshkiki Gitagon for several years now. It's going on my fourth year. I originally started attending the Meshkiki because my mother actually lives in the neighborhood there, in the Phillips neighborhood. And I actually went to high school there. But I heard from people in the neighborhood that the Mashkiki was going on, so I started attending the Grow Your Own classes that they have every week there. And I had just a really positive experience with that, and I was just thrilled to, like, know that this beautiful urban organic farm that incorporates cultural practices, native indigenous practices there. So I became, I work there now as a pre-apprentice, and I've been doing some work there with growing some of our medicines, like tobacco, and some medicines for women. But we have, the Mashkiki just has a really, I think it's a really beautiful place where community comes together. It fosters that sense of community, as well as, of course, educating unhealthy, sustainable practices. And it also incorporates our elders, our Native American elders. They have come to teach classes there consistently now on wild rice or other topics, too, as well. I'm sorry, I didn't really have anything written out, but...
It's perfect.
I feel like it's just really a very positive and a very powerful place. It also has classes for children too as well. But the Grow Your Own classes, it's mainly adults, but families are welcome to come there. And it's just been a really good experience for me. And also it has provided other opportunities for me to learn more too as well about seedkeeping practices, indigenous farming. I was able to go to an indigenous farming conference this year, and other opportunities too as well.
Ms. Sale, this is a little bit off subject, and I apologize because we're short on time and everything else, but there was this, just a couple days ago, this beautiful little girl that was here, and she told me, she shared with me, she was Ojibwe, and that's, you said Ojibwe, right? And she was here to testify and everything else, and so she and her, we took a selfie together and put it out on Twitter because I have a new little friend. But, no, thank you so much. And encouraging children to come and get active as well. So I appreciate that so much.
Okay. Thank you.
Next, Representative Clark.
Sharon, before we go back to our Northside folks, we have one person from St. Paul. I don't want to leave out St. Paul. And she's been working with a number of projects, and I just want to... ask her to talk. And particularly, one of the things this bill does is deal with the issue of trying to have more security for our urban farmers. One of the big reasons this bill is put forward is that our farm land in the cities often disappears.
Yes.
And she has stories to tell about that as well as the work that she's doing.
All right, thank you. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Good morning. My name is Cherry Flowers, and I'm with Holistic Health Farms. And with my partner, Tim, we've been working in urban ag for over a decade in North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, and in St. Paul. We grow produce, we sell at farmers market, we develop and sell value-added products, and we've done consulting and education work as well. I wanted to speak in support of the bill because it serves a population that often misses the boat in terms of funding, and that it improves and encourages land permanence. Our story in terms of land permanence was we've grown in different locations around the city, and we grew for 3 years at North End, so right off Maryland Avenue at Arundel, and in the third year that land was taken back by the city, and it was a function of it needing to fulfill some requirements. There was some HUD money involved, and so it turned into land that was being used then for housing. And so basically the leases for that land were not renewed. And so, all of the farmers who were there, which was us, Stone's Throw, the Advancement for Hmong Women in Minnesota, on 3 acres of land that we'd all been building the soil, all of a sudden, we lost that land. And for each of us, we were farming about a half an acre at that site, and then the other farms were doing between maybe 3/4 of an acre each. That's a lot of land for an urban farmer. So to lose that land suddenly after developing it, after putting up a deer fence, after putting up a hoop house, having to take all that back down and regroup, it's a big deal. And so anything that supports land permanence, I'm all for that. The other thing that land permanence is important for is because a lot of the funding that goes to rural farmers for development of their land, for hoop houses, et cetera, is based on having controlled access to the land for 4 years. And so, again, the more we can support land permanence, the more it levels the playing field between rural and urban farmers to access some of the funding that they might not be able to access otherwise. So basically, Tim and I were the farm co-managers at Frogtown Farm during the first year of production in 2016 after 2 years of working with the city during the site development of that park and farm in Frogtown. We achieved organic certification the first year, and we improved that site with $60,000 worth of money from Capital Region Watershed District and the Conservation District, Ramsey County Conservation District, to put in a water management system and integrating permaculture and perennials into that site. And really, my point there is just that urban farmers are doing more than just growing food and selling it. They're developing sites and improving sites and dealing with water management, dealing with soil erosion, and really, it's an advantage to everybody. Right now, my partner Tim and I are focused more on aquaponics and doing a lot of indoor growing in St. Paul. He's working with adults with traumatic brain injury and low-income underserved kids at City School in Frogtown doing a garden-focused after-school program. He's very committed to working in underserved populations. And
perfect.
And I guess that's pretty much it. I just, we've been really involved in urban agriculture. I'm really passionate about organic. I'm on the Organic Ag Task Force. And we were the Ramsey County Farm Family of the Year 2013. So just to give you a sense of, kind of, again, the changing face of agriculture and how urban agriculture fits into the whole.
And Ms. Bowers, on a personal note, I just want to say or convey the message back to your husband. You said works with disabled kids and stuff like that. Thank you so much for me personally, so I appreciate that. All right, Representative Clark.
So we're going to hear back again from the north side.
Okay. Back to the north side. I like the sound of that, actually. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, right? So we start with the best, and can you say we end with the best? No, I don't mean any discredit to any of the other testifiers.
Thank you very, very much.
Yeah.
My name is Christelle Porter, and I wear quite a few hats. I'm the Secretary of Northside Resident Redevelopment Council. I'm on the board for the Worth Co-op, which is going to be the first grocery co-op in North Minneapolis since the 60s. And I'm also the Executive Director of Cleveland Neighborhood Association. I'm here to speak about the garden that Cleveland Neighborhood has started in collaboration with Project Sweetie Pie. It has been an awesome experience being able to oversee this garden and to implement some of the programs that we have going on at this garden. We're working with a lot of youth in Minneapolis that sometimes have never even seen, have planted a seed in the ground. We're working in a community where we're overran with corner stores and packaged foods, and we're living in a community where a lot of kids don't eat fresh fruits, fresh vegetables. So to be able to work with these kids and show them how to grow food, even down to composting, something that is completely forgotten about. Last year we composted over 600 pounds of raw material. We raise bees and harvest honey right in North Minneapolis. We have a very huge space. It is about two blocks, a few city lots, and it is on a street that is typically looked at as a problem area. However, it's been an area that is now being revitalized and being used in a very positive way. We, as my other hat with co-op, we have been working with the many, many gardens that are scattered all over North Minneapolis, and focusing on harnessing that food that is growing and being able to sell some of that local food in our co-op to the community, which is building the economy and leveling out the equity playing field in North Minneapolis. So this Urban Ag Bill is going to really benefit our neighborhood in a huge way. I'm also on the council with Appetite for Change as well, and we're all working in collaboration together to make sure that we educate our kids in our community, because like the gentleman said before me, farming is a dying art. And if we want people to grow up and to take this on as a profession, we have to teach them how to produce food for all of us and the future of all of us. So we all eat.
Every one of us, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We have one more testifier? Two more, okay. Please state your name for the record.
Yes. Hi, my name is Mia Ulysses. I am the policy manager for Appetite for Change, and I also coordinate a coalition based in North Minneapolis called Northside Fresh. It is a coalition that has started out of North Point Health and Wellness and a consolidation of other organizations and community members in 2008, looking at some of the issues that they saw in our food system on the north side and how we could work towards mitigating some of those issues in a collaborative way. And so we have our coalition partner, Worth Co-op, and a couple other hats that Christelle wears. She had touched on a lot of the points that validate the issues that we see prominently in the urban farming community. But looking at some of the projects that our coalition partners are carrying out, we have a cooperative, which Christelle said is going to be the first black-owned consumer cooperative in North Minneapolis for over 60 years. We have funds to create a permanent market space and are currently in the planning and feasibility study stages of that. We have greenhouse operations that are starting. We have North Market that is happening on the north end of North Minneapolis. There are a myriad of options that we have to pursue mitigating some of these issues that we see in our food system that tie to access and affordability. And looking at the food system as a whole, everything is linked. So from the farm to table, as they say most simply, there are different links into creating what you would call a food system. And a lot of that goes into the growing and producing of the food. Something that is really important and near dear to our hearts, as you, Chair, might have seen in our Grow Food video, is the ability to not only teach our youth how to grow our own food, but get back into our ancestral roots and really show our community how we can create our own food system and mitigate some of the issues that we have seen over the years that haven't been addressed in past generations to the degree that we have seen. And it's just really a great piece to have this legislature being addressed at a time where you see so many communities, not only on the north side, but you have east side communities, you have South Minneapolis communities that are really looking at a holistic way of economic development and food systems issues mitigation in this holistic way. So to that point, having the ability to fund and pilot urban agriculture in the terms of creating wealth-generating opportunities. We have over 30 active garden and urban farming plots in North Minneapolis, and I would like to identify that many of our growers that are active in our Northside Fresh Coalition are growing for profit. They're growing to supply to North Market, to Worth Co-op. They're not growing to sing kumbaya in their backyards and call it a cute day. They're growing for their community, and they're growing for themselves, and they're growing to make their lives more impactful and make a better lives for themselves and their families. And so I'm here to express great support on behalf of Appetite for Change and Northside Fresh Coalition.
And you know what? And this is what I learned. You know, shame on me for not knowing, because this is more than just growing a carrot. Mm-hmm. And that's the message that I'm trying to get out as well.
Exactly.
You know, when I had the opportunity to meet many of the kids, many of the children, you know, it's about growing the youth. It's about growing, like you talked about, the economy and raising awareness around agriculture. And one of the things that I would ask, and I'd ask that of the other testifiers, and I know that Ms. Flowers, on her testimony, she was very passionate about agriculture, or about organics. And one of the things that I ask everybody is that we're all in this together. And I ask that we do not, and she didn't, and I thank her for this, right? So I'm not accusing in any way, shape, or form.
What I'm saying is just stressing my point about not tearing down one segment of agriculture, trying to promote another, right? And a lot of times what we struggle with is we've got this infighting, urban versus rural, GMOs versus organics, food versus fuel, whatever. I say, guys, look, we're all in this together, right? We're all in this together. And we can have the debates and the disagreements, but again, we're all in this together. I can't thank you enough. And the other thing I want is an open invite to come out and tour and learn more, if you will. So do I have that from you?
Yes. Thank you. We actually had received funding through the University of Minnesota to form a partnership with MFU, which is the Minnesota Farmers Union, that's based over here right off of the side of St. Paul, to have some good conversations and dialogues on how urban and rural farming communities can come together around not only this urban ag bill that does also include communities of 10,000 or more, which is pretty easy to hit. But looking at how can we bridge that gap and look at the fact that, you know, the reality of the situation is that we're not competing for markets. This produce is going for the markets that are in our north side communities, and just so in rural Minnesota, that's what they're doing as well. So there's a lot of synergy, and I agree with you, Chair.
All right. Thank you so much. We do have you have one more testimony?
This is my last question.
You have a question?
Just
for you. You have a question for me?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we've heard of we've gotten a lot of open invitations, and we hear all the time about this bus trip that the Capital Investment Group takes.
Yes.
So I'm thinking maybe we should start planning an Agriculture Committee bus trip this summer as well.
Duly noted. No, I agree, and it can be well balanced, right, across the state. And thank you for that. I appreciate it. Ripson Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I volunteered to help work on that.
All right. One more testifier.
Yes, this is final testifier, and I just want to wrap up with a few comments after that. But this is a person who I want you to meet, Beth Henry, who is going to open some new doors, I think, for us in the future with some work that he's doing.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Chair and representatives. My name is Russ Henry, and I'm the owner of a small business in Minneapolis, a Minneapolis resident. I am a former co-chair of the Homegrown Minneapolis Food Council, where I served for 5 years, and now I am a candidate for the Minneapolis Park Board at large. And I am humbled and honored to be amongst this amazing talent that is in the room today in Food Systems Innovations. These folks that you've heard from are working with the youth to improve the health and well-being and the happiness of the people of Minnesota. And so very simply, I just have a very simple request for you today. Please invest in the kids of Minnesota. I think it was Ben Franklin that said that health is our greatest wealth. And when we invest in urban farming, when we invest in innovations in the food system, we are directly putting economic power behind growing health and welfare for the people of Minneapolis. So my simple request is please fund these urban agriculture bills to invest in the kids. And then I have one quick invitation for you. Tonight, at the Food Building in Northeast Minneapolis, 1401 Marshall Street. I know you've all got a very busy schedule, but we're putting on the Local Parks Local Food Innovation Lab, because the 6,500 acres of parkland in Minneapolis can also be utilized as a space to innovate our food system. You're all welcome to come to that. That's 6 to 8 tonight at the Food Building in Minneapolis. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And I want us to be sure to say that we have parkland that is possibly through him and the leadership of others available for urban farming. We're going to work on that together, right?
You bet. I'm sorry. Could the first two please state your name again for the record so we can get it? I had sure. Staff Asper.
Pardon me?
Yes. So I'm Christelle Porter. That's KRISTEL Porter, like the beer and the steak.
Perfect. Yeah, we like that. Yeah. Hey, thank you so much. Representative Clark, I'm sorry. Back to you. Yeah. We're okay. That's the one that we needed, I guess.
Okay. I just wanted to wind up saying is there's a number of people who couldn't be here today that we will be receiving letters from. One of them is HAFA, the Hmong American Farm Association, and they will be sending a letter in support. This is important because this is an organization that whose farming is not right here in the city. It's outside of the city. And Mr. Chairman, you and I visited there a couple of years ago. And though it's covered under, those books are covered under what's called Perurban, P-E-R-I, urban, so that we want to make sure that the small towns and areas not too far from the city are also included if they have, in this case, for example, low-income communities of color and others that are trying to do urban farming there, or doing farming there. And we happen to be a cooperative. The other organization we're here from is the Minnesota Catholic Conference. They stopped me this morning and said, we want to send you a letter of support. We really like what you're doing with this Women Urban Agriculture. So I just wanted to tell you, Mr. Chairman, those two letters will still be coming to the community, and we will make them known to everybody. And just one final thing, as I was talking a little bit earlier, there's a, I think we're missing a line in this bill. It ends in mid-sentence, and I want to make sure that it's on the record because we will correct that, Mr. Sullivan, right? Which states that at least 50% of the resources that may be available in this bill will be targeted to go to low-income communities of color. And that's really important because, as has been talked about, that's a majority of the people that are doing the farming right now, but also that's around the state, too. So, Mr. Chairman, I know you have farmers out in your area who that would be applying to, and also some of our smaller towns or small areas where there's a significant population of communities of color or Native American tribal groups. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope this bill makes it into the omnibus bill with some dollars attached to it. It would mean a lot to the communities that you heard from today. Thank you.
And with that, Representative Clark renews her motion that House File 1461, I should put my glasses on, I got that right, didn't I? 1461 be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate your spending the time.
And thank you to the testifiers. Members, thank you so much. I figure we just continue on versus bringing everybody back tonight. So I appreciate your patience. And the testifiers as well. Thank you so much. So with that, GFP members, 400 North, immediately after, and I may even feed you. With that, we are adjourned.